Good evening, everybody. It is July. Yes, it's July 29th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 43 of Nitro Beard Free to Play. And in other news, I've canceled episode 43 of Nitro Beard Free to Play. That's it.
Way to go, internet hate machine.
It's a threat. I'm Brian.
We make podcasts, so we're better than all of you.
Yes.
We don't need your approval. Actually, yeah, we kind of do.
Otherwise, we're just talking to nobody, and that's sad.
Yeah, if a podcast goes up
hey,
on the
hey, hey, who are you calling nobody?
No one who's listening?
Do you know who I am?
Well, okay, hey, anyone listening, have you actually produced Fez? If not, then you're probably nobody.
It doesn't matter if you're like a paramedic or anything.
Compare yourself to our podcast.
And delete yourselves?
Delete yourselves. Anyway, I am Brian Belita. I am joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Hey, I've got a really funny joke. I'm about to do my impression of the ending for Metro Last...
See, it's funny because...
Oh, wow.
That was my bit.
Oh, man, that's unfortunate. All right.
See, it doesn't work as well because you have known mic issues.
Right.
So we legitimately thought you just got cut off.
Yeah, we thought you just kind of just twitched out there. Imran Khan.
I don't have anything funny to say. I used up all my material already.
That's fine. And Matt Pierce.
Yeah, we burned it all before the cast. Too bad.
Yep. And it's now all being put into the sequel of episode 43.
Which was canceled.
C. Right. Did we actually release episode 43-1? Yes. I guess we sort of did in the beard cast. Anyways.
Well, there was a bug with like 1% of all the downloads for episode 43 that would like delete your entire hard drive, but it would cost too much money for us to fix it. So fuck you.
But yeah, it's too much money to fix it. We just mean that Imran just didn't want to export it again.
Yep.
Do we want to jump into this Edge article and one of the things that drove me the most insane about it?
Sure.
The fact that Edge still exists, it's kind of weird.
Well, first, for anyone who doesn't know, what we are referencing is that Phil Fish quit the internet because there was a strongly worded show that talked about him. There was a show that had strong words about him and for him. I believe they called him a hipster and a tosspot, which is slang for a masturbator or an objectionable person.
To be fair, they called Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow the same thing.
Right.
Only
yes.
Phil Fish decided to explode. I would like to clarify one thing. Did Phil Fish quit the internet entirely, which is probably good for him. He tried this before and it didn't work, or just Fez 2?
No, he did. Right. He canceled Fez 2, which I guess I wasn't even aware was a thing that was in development. I know
it wasn't until like 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Something was said about it.
I think it was E3 that he announced it.
Right.
Which is funny because we're recording this on Skype and your avatar is still like the Fez things you made.
Oh, is it right? Yeah.
Four or 5 years ago.
Back when Fez was first announced, I made a whole bunch of Fez avatars with different hats for various people. Did I make one for you, Imran? I can't remember.
I don't recall having one.
Yeah, oh well. That's okay.
Fez 2 is canceled because of you. Maybe you should have made avatars for that.
Maybe I should have made better hats.
Could they have just been made out of like fake vector art?
Yes.
So that's all there was. There's that logo with the 80s tastic vector art, which makes me think that this may have been a mercy killing.
Like, there is the theory that he didn't actually have any great ideas for Fez 2, which is backed up by the fact he didn't have any great ideas for Fez 1, and he just using this as an excuse to kill Fez 2. Like, I'm calling you out, bitch.
I don't think I think he's legitimately like worked up and believes this is a huge martyr thing for him.
I think so. Yeah.
So we'll go back a little bit in why Marcus Beer, Annoyed Gamer, was called Phil Fish these names.
Right. First time we should mention that this came from a guy named the Annoyed Gamer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marcus Beer, who's an industry vet, so to speak, but he himself does not consider him a journalist. He's just some guy who yells.
Yeah.
He's trying very hard to be Yahtzee and failing.
Well, so that's what every...
He's a professional rancher, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically, he's in the same mold of Yahtzee and Angry Gamer, or Angry Gaming Nerd, I think that was his name.
Angry video game nerd.
Yeah,
he doesn't seem like, from what I read of what he said, he doesn't seem as self-aware as those guys.
No, he kind of seems like he's just, okay, I'm an asshole and I'm going to chat. I mean, I don't know the guy. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want him to quit the internet because of me.
And let's be entirely fair, the entire first salvo by him was so incredibly snotty. And
it was incredibly very, very out of line.
It totally was. It's like Phil Fish, like Jonathan Blow, no developer in the world owes Annoyed Gamer or Game Trailers or who the fuck else ever anything in the fucking world.
So they reached out to Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow over for comments about the Xbox indie quote-unquote reversal hasn't actually been announced yet, but basically it's as good as confirmed because they Game Informer just spilled the beans.
There's a lot
beans.
Of chatter about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
and this isn't crazy to reach out to these guys because Phil
they're
Fish
very outspoken and, about this.
Not only that, but they appeared in Indie Game, the movie, so they're kind of like the biggest public faces of indie
but
gaming.
Even before that, I mean, both Fez and Braid happened at a odd time to make them very, I guess, popular, very popular games. And not
kind of. I mean, they were
not necessarily because they're great games.
But they hit a zeitgeist.
But yes, exactly. Thank you. But that's the only reason we're talking about this is because it's Fez and it's Phil Fish. If this was, the developer of Teleglitch in a game which just launched on Steam, by the way, pick it up. It's really good. We wouldn't be talking about
it. Well, it's funny because the guy who made Retro City Rampage has been talking up a storm in the last couple of days about Microsoft and dealing with those publishers, and nobody gives a shit. He's saying some really interesting revelatory things.
Yeah.
Well, nobody cares.
Well, he didn't come out and say, I'm going to be the face of gaming, which is exactly what Phil Fish said. So when you have someone say that, then you go to him for your soundbite.
Did Phil Fish say that? Does he claim to be the... Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to pick up on what he thinks is sarcastic and what he thinks is like, because he thinks he's Andy Kaufman. And the problem with Andy Kaufman is everyone loves Andy Kaufman's stuff in retrospect. Everyone fucking hated that guy at first.
Sure. Yeah. And Kaufman was in on the joke. Kaufman knew he was an asshole. He knew his character. He played it to the hilt. And this guy, when something bad happened to Phil Fish, he just said, oh, I'm done. I'm out. I'm tapping out.
See, okay, Mark, your opinion on this actually kind of confuses me, because I remember a time when you loved the idea of asshole video game personalities.
I do. And, I like the idea of a developer with a personality, not necessarily asshole. And if I said asshole, then I was wrong. I was being an idiot. I like the idea of a game developer with a personality because we don't have enough of those. But if you're going to be a developer with a personality, then you have to expect shit to go badly your way. If you're going to go out there and put your face out there as a public face of gaming, then people are going to hit you back. And the first time that happens, you can't decide to just crawl up into a ball and decide you're done.
Okay, so I guess that is a real thing that Phil Fish said, was that, quote, just you wait and see, I'm going to be the face of gaming, just you fucking wait, end quote.
See, I'm guessing it's just him puffing himself up and being like, he thinks he's joking and that nobody could possibly take this seriously, but who really knows?
By the same token, you'd have to look at these statements by Annoyed Gamer and say, yeah, these are so absurd, there's no way he's serious, because no one could possibly be that asshole-ish.
Well, he's probably... Annoyed Gamer is almost certainly playing up a gimmick.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do. Like, if you're going to be named Annoyed Gamer, you can't be like, well, we reached out to comment and he didn't answer, and I guess that's okay.
Well, you bring up the word gimmick there, and I think that's kind of important when you bring Andy Kaufman back into this. Because Andy Kaufman was a gimmick. Andy Kaufman was a character. And it's hard to understand where Phil Fish the character and where Phil Fish the person falls into place. Now, apparently he suffers from manic... We don't know this for certain. This no
bipolar, I think, is what he himself admitted that's the case.
Yeah, and if people who dealt with him say, okay, the dude's an asshole, but he's probably also depressive. And depressive people have a habit of sabotaging their public relationships and not even realizing it. So it could just be a situation like
which
that.
Which is a shame. I mean, regardless I know this whole thing, it's shitty. Yeah, I think Phil Fish overreacted.
So let's get a bit further into this timeline before we go there. But basically, Phil Fish heard this podcast or whatever it was Marcus Beard was doing.
It was a video show, I think.
Okay. And he responded on Twitter that, you know, what the fuck are you doing? I demand a public apology. And throughout this, Marcus Beard kept saying, even though he was so completely out of line at the beginning, all his responses are basically, come on to camera and talk about this, and we can hash this out. And Phil Fish said, no, I don't ever want to talk to you. And then it starts getting, like, I think meltdown is the only appropriate term.
Sure.
Yes.
Like, some people just enter into a bunker mentality when something like this happens. It seems like that's what happened to him.
He starts, you know, he insults Beer on a number of different levels, talks about how he'll never amount to anything because he can't create. And then he throws out this thing, which is a Futurama quote about compare your life to mine and then kill yourself, which, A, something really shitty to say to someone who's admitted to being suicidal in the past. And B, if that's the kind of thing you throw out in anger, then you're not just making a joke. And yeah. To someone who's like, to people who have lost friends and family to suicide,
yeah,
that's unbelievably hurtful.
I think anytime you threw out the suicide, something like that, then you've lost a little bit of your humanity. Like, you've
even lost if it's just a joke, like, oh, I'm making a Futurama reference. If I'm arguing with somebody and I said, oh my god, he's a queer, like, oh, that was from The Simpsons, it's okay, yeah. Then if I'm arguing with you in it with the context, that clearly means I mean it to be an insult.
Yeah. Oh, this is an Archie Bunker quote. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah. No, I mean,
for the three people who remember Archie Bunker out there.
Some of the things that Phil Fish said, which, and the way to respond to somebody that says something is not to respond in kind, especially when it's something like what the Annoyed Gamer said. So, I mean, some of the things that Phil Fish said was, it must be frustrating being such a small commentator, only being able to ejaculate vomit out of your mouth from the sidelines.
Can I just say something? That's great. That was pretty good. But go ahead, yes.
Or, today's beef is brought to you by some inconsequential limey fuck.
That's probably good. Okay, that's not good.
That's getting a little out of line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure Phil Fish probably has some British fans.
Yeah.
Well, and, yeah. And I hope, at least think, that Phil Fish maybe regrets some of what he said. But I think some of the frustration comes from what we were talking about earlier. It's hard to tell what was like an actual meltdown and what might be Phil Fish just
Andy Kaufman
writing the, yeah, exactly, Andy Kaufmaning.
So this keeps going, and then eventually some third party who I don't recognize, maybe it was just somebody that followed Annoyed Gamer and Phil Fish, or just one or the other, brings up the fact that, or not fact, but brings up an accusation that Phil Fish hit his ex-girlfriend. Ooh. Which came out of nowhere.
What?
And it's a super weird thing. And, like, Phil Fish says, mind your fucking business. Like, this never happened.
Wow.
But I don't even know why he bothered engaging with that guy. Because if it's a lie, it's a lie. Just leave it. Who gives a shit?
I'm just going to throw it out there that I don't think Phil Fish really can control himself.
Yeah.
Like, never responded to any part of this at any point.
Well, and I'm sure people have said similar things to him, which he has ignored in the past. And it's possible this might have just been the straw that broke the camel's back.
Well, yeah, he said that he's publicly said he's quitting Twitter in the past, right? Or I'm making that up in my head.
Probably.
I think he called like a Twitter hiatus when he was trying to finish Fez and was way behind schedule.
So like 4 years?
I think in the last year. He was saying that he was going to get off of Twitter so that he could spend more time working on the project, which isn't weird or crazy or anything, but I don't think it really worked. But yeah,
I mean, the problem is Twitter is, for better or worse, a great equalizer. Anybody can talk to anybody, and it's up to those people who don't want to hear that shit to ignore it. And maybe that's not like the ideal social decorum, but that's, if you're going to be on a service that allows that, you kind of got to get used to it.
Well, and you can do it right. I mean, you and a couple of the guys from the platforms were, you know, having a little small back and forth between you guys and Patrick Klepek from Giant Bomb.
Yeah.
So it can be done right, and it can be done wrong. It's just, it's hard to tell if it was, you know, it's creating, and I was like, oh, I'm canceling it just to get this outpouring of people going, no, don't cancel it. No, we love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that said, we don't know that. I mean, it could have been a genuine meltdown, which sucks. It sucks that he said these things. It sucked that this happened, and it sucked that he decided to, do that. And I feel bad that the whole thing happened. But then he says things like, we're very successful and we're not going anywhere. And then it ends with him saying, that's it, I'm done. I'm taking the money and running. I'm canceling Fez 2.
If he's very successful, why didn't he put out the patch?
Because it cost more money than he wanted to spend. Not that he couldn't afford, but that he wanted to spend.
So not very successful, this just successful.
I mean, that's one of the things that makes me think Phil Fish has never been that kind of person that wants to engage with his audience in a very nice, touchy-feely sort of way. He always feels like, okay, I'm the creator, you guys are the ones who are playing, this is our relationship.
Right, it's sort of an I-don't-give-a-fuck attitude.
Yeah, you'll play the product as I deemed it fit.
Yeah.
And that's... When he says, okay, you guys can't have Fez 2, it doesn't feel to me like he's saying, I can't take this anymore. He's saying, fuck all of you, you can't have this thing you want because right. I don't feel like doing it.
It's a threat.
It's now a threat. Well, it's not even a threat, it's now punishment. He's punishing all of us for not standing up for Phil Fish.
It's like when Microsoft took away that family share thing, even though there was kind of no point to it, and they kind of tease, like, maybe it'll become back one day.
It's spite, is what it is. Yeah.
Which, I mean... If you've ever taken care of a kid for a long period of time, you've done that.
Yeah. Yeah, you take something away from them.
Yeah, they're misbehaving, so you take something away. But that's not the kind of relationship I think I have with Phil Fish. So I'm not sure why he felt like that should affect people.
I'm just curious as to... Was he expecting there to be an upswelling of like Fez fans, like the Fez community or the Phil Fish community, or maybe the independent gaming community to come up and to defend him? Obviously, none of these things happened. Who was he expecting to fall on their sword for Phil Fish?
The game journalist did rush to his defense.
Yeah, so you want to jump on this Edge thing now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was an Edge article today about the whole thing that came over the weekend about Phil Fish and... all that stuff. And basically, the writer of that article laid it squarely at the feet of gamers.
Yeah, not on Annoyed Gamer or anyone else, but us.
Yes. And fans of Japanese games in particular, because that was a really weird swipe.
And that is where things kind of went off the rails for this.
That was like the first paragraph.
But that was it.
Yeah.
It made it seem like the entirety of everything that the internet disliked about Phil Fish was that one comment about Japanese games. And that is the most completely myopic thing I've read all day. Like, that's idiotic to think that that's the only thing people are mad about Phil Fish for.
It's such a weird thing because... Honestly, I don't think any of us should really care.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that this has been made a big thing is solely because of the drama around it. Like, the fact that, like, oh, I can't believe what... Like, if you see someone just freaking out at Walmart, you stop and stare.
Yeah, that's
essentially what the equivalent of this is.
At the end of the day, we're talking about a guy who developed one game that was mildly well-received, but was far overshadowed by other independent games that were developed during the same time period.
Yeah, the biggest thing that people were mad about Phil Fish for was that his game took forever and then wasn't as good as it seemed.
Right, well, it's not like he's Marcus Ferguson. It's not like he's Notch. He's not that guy. He's not the biggest indie developer. He's not even like... Anyone who puts Phil Fish as the face of indie developers is doing indie developers a huge disservice.
Yeah. So the makers of Indie Game the Movie.
Well, yeah. Sort of.
His game had
hype when they were making that movie. Yeah. And he made himself available.
Like, I'm sure if they could have gone back in time and made that movie about Notch, they would have.
Yeah.
If Notch would give him the time of day now. Notch would probably tell him to go fuck off.
Well, Notch is crazy successful, and he's super nice to everyone.
Yeah.
When people, give him threats over Minecraft patches, he doesn't care. Like, he sees it, maybe it affects him in some way, but he doesn't show that.
He usually kind of just tweets it and laughs. He just kind of is like, oh, this is kind of silly.
The creator of Thomas is Alone was saying that he gets all that sort of shit too, but he just doesn't express it out. No. Like, what good does yelling at your fan base do?
Yeah, it's... Oh, God, and then there's the last sentence in the Edge article.
Yeah, this was the... I know this was the thing that set Matt off, but just the concept that we are not worthy, not worthy to comment on this, but we're not worthy human beings because we haven't produced this great creative work that is the first Fez game.
Well, it's the exact argument our Fish is making on his Twitter is that if you haven't created anything, you have no right to exist on that higher plane, I guess. You're not one of the untouchables.
Complete bullshit and has been addressed by every other media in the world.
Like I think it's really strange for a magazine to say that because your entire thing is criticizing other games.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the next point, they can't say anything bad about another video game because they haven't produced a video game? Is that what they're going to tell us?
Some of them have that attitude. That's why so many games get high scores.
You also hear the same attitude by by movie stars. I remember, yeah. I forget who Rob Schneider was in a war with this to begin with, but somebody basically ripped on Rob Schneider's performance in, what was that Torturba movie is in?
That's a terrible movie.
All of them. Anyway, he said, "Oh, you've never been in a movie. You've never been in a movie. Like, you've never won an award. I've won an award. You can't say this about me." And then Roger Ebert said, "Well, I've won a Pulitzer Prize, so I can actually tell you that your movie and you suck."
Now let's also point this out, that when Roger Ebert tried to make a movie, it was horribly received.
Yeah,
he could not create a movie when he tried, but he's still the best goddamn critic there's ever been for movies.
Or that time Dennis Diak got such bad impressions for Too Human, and then said that only reason that Penny Arcade counted as those impressions, like, he accepted theirs, is because their game also got bad impressions. Which, like, what, no, every bad impression counted.
Well, and then I'm sure, didn't David Jaffe have a similar thing at some point?
I can't remember
him, like, freaking out in front of a camera about Twisted Metal once.
Yeah, I think so. But that's...
Oh, it was him in Kotaku, but I can't remember exactly what it was about.
I mean, I feel like these are sort of different to Phil Fish, who I think over the years has been kind of building and changing and maybe let the hype and the word of Fez get to his head a little bit. And maybe this was kind of the snapping point. Whether real or not, it happened.
I mean, if anything, this shouldn't be about Phil Fish. It should be about the fact that, hey, apparently video game development makes people really crazy and stressed.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
Well, I mean, it would have been so easy for Fish to just turn this back on the guy and, like, said, look at this entitled asshole trying to say that I owe him jack shit. No, yeah. No, fuck off. And he just let the entire interview said, you know what, Phil Fish, you are right. This guy is a dick. You don't owe him jack shit.
Beer was absolutely out of line first, and if he had just left at that, then it would have been all on him. But just because you would have
changed
the instigator does not mean that, like, you know, that it's solely his fault.
Yeah, Beer was basically just clickbaiting.
And it worked.
But in audio.
Yeah,
but...
and it worked in such an amazingly good fashion.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about Phil Fish, so naturally we're talking about Beer, and we're talking about his podcast, which nobody ever talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mike Lemieux suggested to me that all headlines should have said beer battered fish. but unfortunately they didn't.
Oh, they should.
So was his Wikipedia page doctored, or is Phil Fish's actual name Philippe Poisson?
That wouldn't surprise me. He is French-Canadian,
isn't he? French-Canadian. Yep.
I don't think that's, like, worthy of being doctored.
I thought someone would have done that just to make a joke. It's a pretty good joke.
Shogun Gamer did have the beer battered fish headline.
Okay,
I would point out that his Wikipedia page is locked. So I'm going to assume that the
Oh right. He Phil Fish protected his Twitter account or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
someone to commit suicide.
To the Fez article on Edge, that last sentence. Jesus.
Yeah.
Last sentence in the article is, you might hate him, but he made Fez, and as such, he's probably better than you.
No, he's fucking not better than me.
Cool. That's a cool thing that you said there, Chris Davies.
So he's better than you too, Mr. Chris Davies? I'm wondering how you judge that.
He apparently thinks so. Sure,
yeah, but he's probably fine with that. It's that he's telling other people that Phil Fish is better than him. He made, one video game that had a lot of hype. And I was one of the most hyped people for it. I mean, Imran knows that. Most of you guys know that. I was so excited for that.
Did you actually play it, or
I've played it, and I honestly got bored. I got really bored by it. It feels it's pretty, but it feels empty.
Yeah, well, Mike Lemieux really had this discussion last week, but it seems like we're the only sane people in the world that hold this opinion. That is a boring game. It's a ton of busy work surrounded by a bunch of cryptography puzzles.
I think some people think that because the game is slightly above average in the puzzles it demands of you, that it must be on a higher plane altogether. Like, the love of Fez might speak more to our lowered standards of video games than it does the actual quality of Fez.
Or maybe we just want to pull for it because it is this indie story.
Right. I will say that music's fucking great, though.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. It has great music. It has a great art style. Looks beautiful.
I love it. It
controls nicely, but I couldn't.
I just wish, like, that art style and that music and those controls were inside a compelling video game. that didn't feel like I was just wandering through a bunch of levels till I get to the next puzzle room.
So if you like that art style, sort of, and good music, but you want good gameplay, you should play Nimbus.
What's Nimbus?
I gave away a copy, got it like the 50th episode of the Beardcast, I think. So it's pretty old, but it's a time trial game though. So it's not like platform. You control a ship. It's good. They're coming out with a plus version on the PC soon. But anyway, I just wanted to feel that more people should play Nimbus is what I'm trying to say.
Nimbus, yes,
the Nimbus developer is a tosspot.
We're gonna get angry comments about that.
Well, the developer is actually Tosspot International, so it's really kind of unfair.
It's the name of the company.
I completely made that up. It's not.
All right. So have we given Phil Fish enough time?
I'm kind of fried out on Phil Fish.
I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, that's what happened. The fish we talked about fried. It. Hmm. He overreacted or whatever, or put on more of a show, and we're still probably gonna see Fez 2.
You could say a Phil Fish fezzled out. Get it?
Yes. Phil Fish fezzled out. Hello, boys. We're back.
No one's going to have the context to understand that without hearing what we talked about during
the
break.
No, that's fine. Yeah, we were... Okay. That, of course,
wasn't Independence Day.
That, of course, was my gripping rendition of...
Context is for losers who haven't made video games.
Have you made a video game? Yeah, we were talking about the Shadow of the Eternals Kickstarter being actually back now. And my thought when I saw that it was back was just the shot from Independence Day. From ID4, which they're making a sequel to, I should mention.
Is it called ID8?
I hope so.
I just want to be ID5. They just came back the next day. It's like, God damn it, we thought you were gone.
Right, yeah.
There's another ship. There's another fucking ship. We're sorry.
Sorry, I only give my good big speeches about independence and those kinds of days on 4th of July. 5th of July doesn't really mean anything, so...
Yeah. So
they're gonna go find Bill Paxton.
Independence Day is going to be Labor Day and it's about the cleanup.
Right, just that, oh man, this is a real mess.
And then they hit him with like a white ship, and it's like, don't wear white after Labor Day.
Okay, the best sequel to Independence Day already exists. It's called Pacific Rim because it's stupid.
Nope.
And it's just fun, and you don't have to think about shit.
I'm not going to let you just sneak Pacific Rim discussion.
Yeah. There was a better speech.
Sorry, Mark.
A better inspiring speech.
Tonight we are canceling the apocalypse. I know that from the trailers. All right, that's all we're going to talk about, Pacific Rim.
There's an elbow rocket. He's got a rocket in his elbow, and he punches dude.
Yep. So, yep, that's pretty much what we think about the Shadow of the Eternals Kickstarter, is we're back.
Rocket elbow.
Yep, I was kind of hoping that it would just eternally be...
So,
I think it might make it this
Yeah,
time.
I think it's going to, according to the site KickTrack. Which, you know, like...
But that, keep in mind, that's episode one.
Yes. Well, no. They have to come back. Is it? Because I thought
getting rid of the...
No. They claim that they have funding, some mystery funding from somewhere else, like $1.5 million or something, and that it's going to be an 8 to 10 hour single concentrated gameplay experience.
Okay. So they've not only managed... They've managed to take it from $12 million to $750,000.
Wait, 1.2 million?
Yeah, it was 1.2 million, right. But it was like eight episodes.
No, I just wanted to make sure because you said 12 million, and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, but it was like eight episodes.
At a single episode at a time. Yeah.
Well, Double Fine attempted to budget it and turned out being $12 million. So they had to cut down a little bit.
Right. Yep. So anyways, so that happened. It's back. I guess Dennis Dyack is like saying, no, he's just one part of this, because I think people didn't like that.
Also, but, the pedophile is nowhere near this one anymore. We're sorry about the pedophile.
They should have a like survey, like Kickstarter does a survey. It's like, would you rather have Dennis Dyack on this or the pedophile?
Yeah, right. Because I'm curious what people would choose. Take a poll.
That's a hell of a Sophie's choice. You have to either fund a known pedophile or Dennis Dyack. Either which way, Shadows of the Eternal will be made. but one of the two options will happen.
I would go with Dennis Diok over the pedophile, but it's closer than I think anyone's comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah, because Dennis Diok's in the end, he's doing less damage than the pedophile, but
he's only harming children emotionally.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. But the pedophile will be in jail, so presumably the DA will be able to, like, have a good enough case. It's just going to... I don't know.
Has anyone developed a video game in jail?
What now?
Has anyone developed a video game in jail?
Well, if Lyndon LaRouche can, like, run for president in jail, I'm pretty sure you can develop a video game from jail.
Yeah, I don't think they give you access to a computer like that in jail.
Who was the guy that, like, he was making a video... He was in jail for tax evasion. He played Blade?
Wesley Snipes,
yeah. He was making a video game about himself while in jail, or funding one somehow.
Was he really?
That's yes.
Amazing. Was it called, like, Wesley Snipes Goes to Jail?
I hope so.
Blade Goes to Jail.
Instead of, like, spending money,
vampire.
Instead of money, he needs to go to Tigon Studios and make a video game starring himself and Vin Diesel. You'd watch that shit.
I'd watch that.
Riddick and Blade in the same fucking movie? In the same game.
Snipes has teamed up with Finnish game developer Lapland Studios, who are working in conjunction with Elstree Studio Productions, in an action strategy game that features Snipes as a facilitator, a man with unique talents that are in high demand in a world powered by money, sex, and intrigue.
God, I don't want to play that fucking game!
The world is powered by sex.
Makes sense to me. Also, it's iPhone, iPad exclusive.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Are you afraid you're not going to get the full depth of Wesley Snipes' vision without buttons?
Yeah, listen, if you give Wesley Snipe, I need to be able to control him. Like, it's everyone's dream to control Wesley Snipes.
Especially the IRS.
Especially the IRS. Like, imagine Ninja Gaiden, but instead of Ryu, it's Wesley Snipes.
Well, there's that dude in Tekken that's clearly Wesley Snipes, but they don't call him Wesley Snipes.
This must be a new development in Tekken. I don't remember that.
It's within the last... I mean, it was Tekken 4 or 5, I think. Hold on, I have to look him up. But he's, No, that's not
Raven? Right.
Yes, that's
okay.
Him.
Yeah, I could buy him being Wesley Snipes.
I mean,
or Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman is going to play Wesley Snipes as Blade.
Yes, in Tekken 5.
Tekken 5.
They're up to Tekken 6 now, so next one is Tekken 7.
Oh my god! Star Wars Episode 7.
I think like there's been like two Tekken tags, right? So technically, you're up to like Tekken 8.
Yeah, but you don't count those. But like Street Fighter Cross Tekken counts as like. Street Fighter 5.
Yeah, but like Street Fighter Alpha, that counts as a Street Fighter.
But it doesn't count as Street Fighter 4.
It should.
So I was thinking, like...
For now, Marco's in charge of free-to-play episode naming.
So I was thinking that having a gaming restaurant might be a good idea, just to have, like, a menu full of puns. And the favorite one I came up with is Tekken Tag Tuna Melt.
That's really good.
That's super. I also like Blintz of Persia.
Blintz?
Yes.
Nice. I do enjoy a good cheese Blintz.
Here's your one big problem. Dave & Buster's already exists, and they didn't think of this either. So apparently something wrong with this plan.
No. Dave & Buster's exist, but they completely ignore the fact that there's food.
Yes.
It's like, come for the alcohol. Think... Also, there's other stuff.
You go there for beer. And to get on top of, like, a child's arcade game and massively oversize it.
Wow, man. If you skip, like, two words in that sentence, it sounds pretty bad.
It's another Dennis Dyke situation?
Yes. God damn it, Mark.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Always back to the pedophile.
Has anyone here actually been to a Dave & Buster's?
Yes.
I've never actually been inside of one.
Okay. I've been in a situation because, you know, there's one here in Times Square. I can go to it any time, but I never do, which tells you something. I was at, the last E3 in Atlanta. Somehow or another, friends who worked at GameStop managed to get me a badge to get into E3. And being idiot country bumpkins, we said, there's a Dave & Buster's in Atlanta. We've totally got to go to Dave & Buster's. And even for, like, 1998 or 4 or whatever the fuck it was massively overpriced. But the Pylite was a full-size Mech Warrior machine. Like, 4-pod Mech Warrior.
Those are gone.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah, modern Dave and Buster's don't have anything kind of cool like that. It's mostly, believe it or not, they're arcade versions of iPhone games.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Because they just make a giant, like, 24-inch touchscreen.
Yeah, so it's like four games. That,
and you know, anything that requires a gun.
Bro, I set the high score on Fruit Ninja. Yeah, they have some racing games, too.
Well, I like peer insight because like the one theater like on Times Square has like a Dave and Buster's, like you have to go through the Dave and Buster's in order to get to the bottom of to exit this theater, right? And I look through the glass window sometimes, and there's like a Guitar Hero arcade machine there. It's like, this is disgusting. There's nothing that looks like an arcade game there. There's no Street Fighters. There's no nothing. It's horrible. I guess that's just how arcades are now. All arcades.
Well, it's because Dave & Buster's isn't for. It's not. It's yeah. It's not an arcade. It's
yeah. That's a weird combination. What? How are they making any money? Who are they selling to?
No, it's
no, no,
the
no.
Same,
they're
the
making their money
that,
off the booze. Dave & Buster's is a
play,
bar that has games.
Yes, it's the same people that play Golden Tee in your local bar.
Yeah, it's Dave & Buster's is barcade for people who don't like nostalgia,
and don't like video games.
Barcade is amazing, by the way. Everybody needs to go to Barcade. If you come back to New York City,
yeah.
I will take you to Barcade. Or RetroBit, Stupid Arcade.
Yeah, I need to come up and visit sometime soon. Maybe Matt can join us as well.
That'd be great.
And Imran, we all should get together sometime. We should plan for some time in the future. Maybe at some sort of video game event.
We'd have to start a Kickstarter for Nitro Beard.
What? We'll make it
pay for our airfare, please.
Well, if it's in New York.
You don't have to pay for my airfare.
You just have to pay for Imran's airfare.
Yeah.
And Wes, if he decides to do a thing. But anyways, let's talk about some video games. We've been playing. I've been playing a lot this past week. It's been kind of a crazy week for video games. After the Steam sale, the Shadowrun came out. Shadowrun Returns.
So how does the save system in that work? Is it awful as we thought it was going to be, or what's going on?
It's not there. Okay, well, there is no manual save. Absolutely no zero manual save whatsoever. It auto saves at the beginning of levels, and that's that. And I ran into a time today that became an annoying thing, because I was in the middle of a level, and it wasn't even like a like a fighting level. You're back at like the hub. You're at the Seamstress's Union, which is kind of your safe house. You can buy and upgrade stuff. Hit up merchants, and the game crashed and in the middle of me going some upgrades and buying some stuff, and so I had to go back through and do it again, which is pretty frustrating. But the levels are small, like the load instances, excuse me, are small, so it's not a terrible inconvenience, but it would be nice to be able to, like, save in the middle of combat or sort of manage your save at the beginning of levels. So let's say, you want to go through and maybe you didn't like that you used your charisma to charm someone over and you wanted to punch them in the face instead and you want to try that. So it's not terrible, but it's not the best save system.
So apparently the campaign is like 20 hours, like 12 hours long or 20 hours or something?
I'm not sure. Not very far in. I'm a Turtle gamer, of course. So I'm like 6 hours, but I'm still very, very early on, I think, just because I've been taking my time. But
apparently the entire like value in it is like playing like other like Shadowrun campaigns.
There's a campaign editor, which is going to be great. I mean, it's anytime you can allow for user created content from the community, you're going to extend the lifetime of your game. So A plus for that. The game is gorgeous. It's really pretty. It's fun. I am enjoying it. And I just have to compliment Harebrained Schemes and Jordan Mesher and stuff for their turnaround. I mean, they really knocked the Shadowrun Returns Kickstarter. I mean, from the Kickstarter view, out of the park. They got
is that the first big game Kickstarter that's actually finished?
I think so.
Came out.
I want to say.
Like, I know other ones have, but not this. Right. Is the first really big one.
This, as I think it is. I think you're right. I'm pretty sure it's the first big one, and they really knocked it out of the park. I mean, for what they've delivered in the amount of time that they had, they've done a great job, and I recommend it. It's good, and the writing is really good, at least in the early game. I heard from David Marchman that there are times where it's just like, oh, this is awful. But the writing and the characters are all really, really good. Again, it's super pretty, painterly, and
I wonder if there's going to be like any huge like legal difficulties in just like porting over like the entirety of the SNES or Genesis Shadowrun games.
That would be fucking rad. I mean, I don't know if like they'll port it, but I'm sure somebody's going to attempt to make the campaign by hand. But I don't know how it differs from the Super Nintendo Shadowrun.
Let's pretend for a minute I have no idea what Shadowrun is. Okay. How does this game play?
How does the game play? It's a turn-based squad.
Isometric. It's like imagine Baldur's Gate in Cyberpunk.
Did you play Popolo Qua on the PSP?
No.
Well, fuck you then. You didn't make.
Damn.
Sorry. No. It's a turn-based isometric combat RPG.
So like XCOM?
Yeah, sure, like XCOM. Except like XCOM, the instances are just battles. In this, there's like a dialogue system, the different choices.
So like Fallout.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like an Infinity Engine game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
So as someone who has no nostalgia for old Shadowrun stuff, is this actually worth a buy?
Yes, I think so. I have no nostalgia for Shadowrun, really. I mean, I knew of it, and I had friends that played it, but it didn't really have any nostalgia effect with me. I just know it's like cyberpunk mixed with magic, mixed with, it's basically a blending of all fantasy worlds into the Shadowrun. So you have like an orc who's a hacker and stuff like that, or a elf who's a shaman. But I guess that maybe happens anyways.
Elves are naturally shamans. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, yeah.
I don't know, man.
The real world elves do tend towards shamanism.
So yeah, there's a variety of classes and ways to progress your character. Applying your points, which in this game is called karma. So I've made my guy a punchy elf guy, who's an academic. So like you get to pick a dialogue option. So like who you're chatting and your voice can. We'll open up certain dialogue options as you play through the game.
Is cyberspace in this one?
Yes, I think that's how the hacking works.
Okay.
So like the, what are they called? The Deckers, which are basically your hackers in the game. They can jack into systems, and there's kind of a sort of similar turn-based battle that goes on in cyberspace in order for you to do the hack. As far as I know, I haven't hacked or decked yet. But no, it's good. I think it's very... approachable to, which is good. I don't know how the original Shadowrun game was. Probably it was pretty approachable since it was on the Super Nintendo. But I was a little intimidated at first seeing like the RPG progression tree that everything opened up, and you can pretty much customize any character the way you want. I mean, you're not limited to any specific trees or characteristics when you pick a class. And I think
so. If this game is a turn-based isometric RPG. Is that why everyone was so crazy pissed at the 360 Shadowrun Return multiplayer?
Oh, God, the 360, yeah. The 360 Shadowrun was absolutely...
That's a different game entirely. Yeah. Nothing to do with Shadowrun Returns.
Yeah, that was basically...
But it was just Deathmatch.
That was basically Microsoft taking a terrific FASA license that should have made them a ton of money and sending it off to die for no good reason.
Because multiplayer, basically.
Yeah.
To get a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Which didn't work. I mean, everyone involved knew, anyone who had any sort of nostalgia for Shadowrun, anyone who is interested in Shadowrun knew that that was absolutely going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing interesting in there for you at all.
Yeah.
And they just turned it into this, what it was even supposed to be, because this was before, like, the big Call of Duty, before Call of Duty got huge. It's just a big Halo-like thing, I guess, with
magic. It was a multiplayer game. I mean, that's all it was. Kind of, and you could have your different characters. It might have had different modes, like Capture the Flag or something like that, but that's all I remember of it. Yeah. But so it's... I recommend it. It's a little rough around the edges. Just like stuff like the GUI, the GUI doesn't feel, you know.
Oh, yeah, wow. Putting the GUI was terrible. We don't know what the hell they were thinking.
Like, there was like a half second where you said that. I was like, what?
I'm just slurring left and
this
right
is about
now.
To get really fucking awkward.
I didn't mean that. No. My wife and I have been watching X-Files, and an episode today that we watched that had to do with Jew hate and one of them hands out a pamphlet, and it was just, it's awful. But that's not what I meant. The GUI is like a little, you know, feels a little sluggish at times. And, you know, kind of clicking to navigate your character, or trying to like target an enemy that's behind another enemy gets a little finicky.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are small complaints.
That always happens in those games. So that any kind of isometric RPG, like the Infinity Engine games or Fallout, always sucked in that sort of thing. So that's not really, if you know that you're going in, that's going to happen. It seems to me like it's a $20 game, right?
It might be less. You're probably right though. Yeah.
I think the value is going to come when you start seeing like more campaign maps come out for that thing.
Yeah, it's $20. I guess there's a deluxe diversion that comes with the soundtrack and an illustrated PDF, and it's $35 for that.
And so, apology to William Gibson for stealing money from him.
Yeah. So I've been playing that. Imran, Mike, and I played some Monaco last night. Because
Monaco:Thief 4.
Monaco: Don't let
you don't, don't let you, Mike... you get the joke behind that, right?
Wait, what?
The title of Monaco is Monaco: What's Yours Is Mine, and for some reason, like Eidos Montreal just wholesale took that for Thief 4, so now their game is called Thief. What's yours is mine.
Well, my title is Monaco: Don't Let Mike Be the Mole.
Yeah, Mike is.
Mike,
really excitable.
Mike, don't be the mole. For anyone, so the mole is a character that can basically dig through anything. He can just create holes in walls, no matter what. So like, you can just burrow your way straight through a map to where you want to go.
Seems exploitable.
It's not, because you can't really see guards.
Yeah.
And Mike, rather than using doors that we have already opened, we'll just dig a hole next to it.
There are two types of fun in this game. There can be fun in kind of actually setting out a plan and being stealthy and working with your levels, but a lot of the fun of this game comes from the chaos that comes when Mike burrows through a hole into a room of five guards and they start chasing after you, and you have to backtrack and dig another hole to go forward, and then I try to sneak up behind the guards as they're chasing Mike and knock him out. Meanwhile, Imran is like, you know, sending his monkey around to pick up loot.
See, there's this part, like, every floor has, like, an end space you have to get to, like, the stairs to the next floor. Yeah. And so, basically, every time Brian and I would get there, Mike would just basically say, hey, there's a thing over here. We'd be like, no, we can come back and get that. There's, like, a bunch of guards around there. There's lasers all over the place. Don't go for it. And he'll just scream, I'm going for it, and just run right into
it. It's funny because the space that you have to get into to go to the next area is like, it's on the map, it's on level, like it says a stairs, but you kind of have to hold a direction into it, and this little timer fills that it takes in order to get you up to kind of create tension if a guard's chasing you. But the guards will just hang out there as Imran and I are just kind of silhouetted shadows waiting on this space for Mike to get there. So there's just this pile of guards saying, hey, you fuckers, get down from that ladder.
The best thing is, like, when someone dies, like they get shot to death or whatever. Like, they're a skeleton on the ground, and they can be revived, but when you're standing over someone reviving them, it makes this really weird sound. It makes
it sound like their flesh is all coming back. So it's
like you're eating them. It's the weirdest thing.
That's my best emulation that I can do of the sounds.
Maybe
it's pretty.
Maybe awesome. Like squeezing like skin onto their skeleton.
Right. Yeah.
And muscles and stuff.
It's pretty hilarious.
It's a really fun multiplayer game.
It is fun, and again, a lot of the fun comes from the chaos that happens when somebody fucks up.
Also, it's super weird the way they do matchmaking, because if you make a private game,
God, this is so weird. Yeah,
like you can't. Nobody can actually join your game. Like, not even your friends.
Yeah. But if you make,
so I'm not sure who's supposed to be in that game. But if you
make a public game that allows your friends to join, anyone from the internet can also join. We're like waiting for the game to start, you know, and you know, SuperFox 987 will join, and we just kick him out, and then go, start the game before anyone else joins.
So you can't make a private game and then send invitations?
No, it's weird. I'm not sure why it's like that, but you can, you know, make a public game, limit the players if you know you just have three. And just try to quickly invite everyone before a pub joins.
Yeah.
Actually, that's the only achievement I have in Monaco right now is Dembones, revive an online teammate.
I think I have the same one.
I think we all managed to get that one last night.
So basically, if you play with Mike, don't let him be
the mole. Don't let him be the mole.
Was the heist a success, or did we all killed? Or
Oh, yeah. Each of ours.
It was a success in, like, you know how the Three Stooges still got their job done?
Oh, yeah.
It's like that.
Or how
we somehow Jar Jar Binks our way into winning.
Or how Phil Fish is still going to make Fez 2. It's like that.
With slapstick. So, and I know it's like a squad-based game. So, like, the other two classes, were they, like, handled by the AI, or you just didn't there have them, or what?
There are a handful of classes. There's the mole, who can dig through walls. There's the locksmith, who can, you know, lockpick doors and stuff like that much, much quicker than most other people. There's a...
The cleaner,
he can, if he like sneaks up behind an unsuspecting guard or a person, he can knock them out. There's the thief, I think they're called. I might have the wrong name, but he has a monkey that runs around collecting all the collectibles. Pickpocket, thank you. He has a monkey that runs around collecting all the collectibles on the level, which you're trying to get. There's the gentleman who, as long as he's out of sight from enemies, he'll put on a disguise, which means he can then walk by enemies. I think there might be more past that.
Yeah, there's more, but I know there's a woman, but we don't have her
unlocked yet. Yeah, we haven't unlocked them yet. Oh, she's the lookout.
Is she?
Yes, okay. I think she's the lookout, and she can, like, you know, see footsteps better and kind of see around corners, because a lot of this game is dictated by the fact that you can only see what you have line of sight of, so you constantly have these vision cones that are being adjusted as you move around pillars and rooms and doors and windows.
There's a lot of times I'll just walk into a room and there's going to be a bunch of guards that don't quite notice me yet. And the smart thing to do would be to walk backwards, but instead I just run
right through the laser trip that sends off an alarm.
Yep.
So we've been playing that. We'll probably play more of that. And the other thing I've been playing, I picked up Xenoclash 2, the 2-pack for that, and I've been playing with Kalen. And it's a weird game still. I mean, that was kind of like the one of the enjoyable things about the first game, but I don't know, this might be one of the first games that I've actually bought and played, and I'm like, this may be sort of a little bad.
Is it significantly different from Xenoblade 1?
Xenoclash.
Xenoclash 1, yeah.
No, it's similar. I mean, it's, you know, a first-person brawler.
How similar is it to Xenogears?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
No. There is some sort of RPG progression, like you can apply points to your character. The voice acting is hilariously bad. So I think we might slug through it, because the combat is sort of fun. You know, the first-person melee is sort of handled well. But I don't know. I'm playing too much else. Like, I'm you know, going through Dishonored right now. I'm at the Boyle Estate Party in Dishonored.
Oh, can't remember which one that was.
That's the
that was the dinner party. Yeah.
So
that's actually my favorite.
Which I seem to remember Mark and or maybe Imran was saying that was like they wish the whole game was like that.
Yeah,
I think that's the there are a couple levels that are really good like that, but that's the part of the game where like starts to like be its own game.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think was that the one with the there's one that it's in a whorehouse. Is that the one or is it a different one?
No, the Golden Cat different is one. Before that.
Okay,
this is like the actual party. You duel a guy before you go in.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember this. I actually like the Golden Cat level better than that one.
Yeah, Golden Cat was more sneaky, at least for me.
Did you buy that Dishonored DLC when it was on sale?
I did, yeah. I bought the Knife of Dunwall, and I bought the the challenge level pack. Yeah, so I got those.
It's supposedly really good, and kind of makes me want to go back and do Dishonored.
Yeah, no, so I'm glad I'm slugging through that. I've been... You know, like any time Kaiser invites me to play Left 4 Dead, I'm like, nope, sorry, gotta play Dishonored. I gotta work my way through these single player games instead of perpetually playing multiplayer games.
Also, we've been playing Left 4 Dead for 5 years, so I might want to play
a different game. We've been playing a lot of Left 4 Dead.
I downloaded CSGO and I just haven't installed it
yet. Yeah, we should. I know you and Mike got that. We should play that.
I'm not sure if CSGO is an improvement because CSGO is 10 years old. I'm saying maybe Valve should make a different damn game.
No, does it make
Counter-Strike Go is new. You're thinking of Counter-Strike Source, maybe?
How is Counter-Strike Go new? It's like it's the same maps.
No, they're new maps. And they're new gameplays, and the GUI is overhauled and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Day Dust.
Yep.
But you're just going to play Dust.
No, I don't know. I never liked Dust.
It doesn't matter if you like Dust or not. You're going to play Dust.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted a lot of people to get Counter-Strike Global Offensive is because it's the shorter gameplay time. So for like, there are nights where I'm like, oh, Left 4 Dead, I would like to, but I don't want to spend an hour and 15 minutes playing Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah, if you play Left 4 Dead 2, that's what you're doing that evening.
Yes. Yeah. Forget it. Exactly. Yeah.
And if you start to get behind, like in the first half hour, then you there's nothing else you can do. You're stuck in there.
It's still fun though. I still really enjoy it.
But, for specific definitions of the word fun.
Yeah. So that's what I've been playing and a bit of what Imran's playing. So what else? You been playing much else, Imran?
I, on a whim, decided to buy Sly Cooper 4 because I really, really loved Sly Cooper 1 and did not so much feel Sly Cooper 2 and 3. And at no point in the 2 or so hours I've put in this game have I felt that I've been having fun. Like, not even kind of a little.
So I never actually played any of the Sly Cooper games. What is the appeal to Sly Cooper?
Sly Cooper 1 was a legitimately good platformer with linear levels and, like, fun mechanics. Like, everything felt... Sucker Punch has this really... If you've played the Infamous games, you recognize what I'm talking about, but they have this really sticky kind of platforming mechanic, and that's incredibly unique to them. So Sly Cooper basically built itself around that. And they had some occasional things where, like, oh, you gotta play this minigame as one of Sly's friends. And then, in later games, they started making those minigames bigger and bigger, and to the point where they were actually, like, the game is split up into thirds, and the fun platforming I like about Sly is just a third of the game.
And you have to deal with Sly's stupid friends instead of just Sly.
Yes. It's Sonic Syndrome all over.
Right.
Like, it feels like it's holding the platforming levels hostage behind, oh, now you have to do this hacking minigame as Bentley.
So, like, but the Sly levels, do they seem good, or do they seem like they've fallen off as time went by? It seemed like they ran out of good, like, Sly ideas, and that's why this happened to them.
I've only played as Sly for, like, the tutorial
level. Oh, wow.
Then you do a Bentley level, then a Murray level, then you... The basic structure of the game is they put you in an open world-esque hub, and you have to do, like, occasional, like, little missions, like, oh, you need to take pictures of this. It's like, no, I just want to go into a stage and...
Well, it really is like this, like Sonic 3D in a microcosm. You can actually see it devolve into hub worlds and everything else you don't like. And focus on, like, his stupid friends. You don't want to play his stupid friends.
It's really not fair, because Sly Cooper, I thought, was the best of that, like, Sony's PS2 platformer triumvirate. Right? But then they couldn't take it somewhere logical. And they just, I guess they made it open world because GTA was open world and everything else is open world then. And I don't think that helped the game at all. I think if they went back to what Sly Cooper was in Sly Cooper 1, it would be a much better game.
Any of those three series wind up being decent past the first couple games? Because I remember they did the exact same thing with Jack. They just turned into an open world game for no good reason.
People swear by Ratchet and Clank. Like, they say those games are still really good. Crack in Time was my first one, and I never really liked it.
I think I played... was that the first PlayStation 3 one? Yeah, I played that one. I wasn't feeling it either. It didn't feel special at all.
And they're making a sequel to that for PS3 as well.
Well, good. The PS3 needs games, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not the relief.
What was the other Ratchet and Clank game? Was it... wasn't Up Your Arsenal, was it?
It wasn't.
I think that was a PS2 game. A series of
spin-offs. There was the short one, right, which was like the Pirate's Booty one.
Age of Booty.
Yeah.
Then All for One, which I'm not sure is the sex fun they think it is. That's always rubbed me the wrong way about Ratchet and Clank games. Like, I don't think those title puns are funny.
Also, there's these little kid games. They're supposed to be like something you give like your 8-year-old brother. Why the sex puns?
Oh, right.
It's supposed to be the winking nod.
Ratchet and Clank Future Tools of Destruction was the first one on the PS3. And then it was Quest for Booty, and then A Crack in Time.
And then
there's Ratchet and Clank Into the Nexus.
That's a sex pun. Unless I think that means something weird in like British slang or something.
Is Nexus like our slang for vagina?
Maybe.
Maybe. There's a.
I've never heard that
full
before.
Full frontal assault is. Let's
find a lady and see if she ever called her vagina a Nexus.
I'm sure someone has.
Is Nexus one of the ladies? If you're listening, is Nexus one of the names that Cosmo or whatever calls your vagina?
I can think of at least one major reason that statement is faulty, or that request.
Because no ladies listen to the podcast?
There you go.
That was sad.
I don't know that. It's possible.
Nah.
But we don't know that.
Ladies, if you listen to this podcast, let us know. Yeah,
let us know. That just comes off as creepy.
And a picture.
No, Mark, no.
Of your car.
Go work for Dennis Dyack.
I'm sorry.
Mark or Dennis Dyack. Let us know in the comments.
Which would you rather fund?
Jesus.
All right, so Mark, what not Dennis Dyack games have you been playing?
So I finished Metro Last Light, and I can't really express my displeasure with how this game ended without spoiling Last Light. So before I begin, are any of you three ever planning on playing Last Light?
I will at some point this year.
I will probably not.
No. All right. Would you be pissed off if I were to tell you how that game ends?
Maybe not me, but I don't know that we want to spoil it on a podcast. Yeah, that's...
Unless we preface it saying that, hey, there's a spoiler for Metro Last Light.
Okay, but this, before you, did any of you play like the first Metro game?
I played
briefly. Yes.
Did you, any of you finish the first Metro game?
No.
Okay. No. That makes things much more difficult. Okay, so the concept of the first, well, not the entire concept that, okay, so the entire concept of first Metro game was that you were doing these moral choices and you weren't really aware of them at the time, but there were like these multiple endings and everything, and like the way you interacted with people affected like the outcome of the game, but it was never really surfaced anyway. If you were a dick, then bad things would happen. It wasn't like there was like a meter that was going
Sergeant Putin will remember this decision.
Yeah. Well, so there's two choices at the end of Metro Last Light. There's like this one, which is this horrible, like, sociopath. Why would you ever do this? And this other, which is like redemption and stuff. So at the beginning of Last Light, it reveals that your guy was an asshole. And it's just, and you, because you're playing the same guy, it's like a couple months after the end of the game.
Was it a dream all along?
No, it was, I wish it was. Well, some parts of Metro are a dream because, okay, do you remember Rifts? You ever play like the Rifts, like RPG? Or you know about Rifts?
No.
Okay. About Rifts.
Okay, so the entire point of Rifts was like there was this nuclear war, and like all the souls that died opened up these rifts in space-time, and weird shit started pouring out. And the thing about Metro is like a lower scale version of that. It's just that all of humanity is stuck in, for all everyone knows, all of humanity is stuck inside the Metro system of Moscow. And like when nuclear bombs went off, all these souls tried to get into the afterlife, and it fucked everything up because now there's these weird rifts in space-time and things keep going back and forth.
I didn't even realize that was a thing. I thought it was just apocalyptic Russia and you're fighting some monsters.
It's actually a really cool concept. It totally is. And the first game was amazing. The second one kind of just tossed away a lot of the stuff you liked about the first game. But I don't know. I talked about this last week. They keep doing this one convention where every time you enter a level, at the end of it, you're like knocked out or incapacitated, or like an NPC like walks you to the next level. And they every single level they fucking do this, and it's annoying.
I always get Metro confused with that Raven FPS.
Hexen?
The one that can, like, you have a time glove.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Continuum? No, Singularity.
Singularity,
that was
it's also
it.
Russian. Though it's also Russian, yeah.
That was a pretty decent game if it was like a really simple Bioshock knockoff.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of like games that are trying the simple Bioshock knockoff.
That was the one with the presidents at the end, right?
No, that was Crucible?
Matt.
No, what was that game called?
Matt knows.
Oh, what?
High Voltage Software made it.
Yes.
Conduit, yeah. Well, Conduit 2.
Okay, no. No, Conduit 2 has the presence at the end, which is shocking that anybody made it to the end of Conduit 2.
Nobody, I mean, it was on YouTube. I think that's the only reason anyone.
Yeah. That means at least one person finished it.
Well, at least one person is going to finish it.
Very sad, sad person.
Oh. So, to the end of Last Light, you're just saying, and the game's just getting good because you have this last stand. You're defending like your home base. And there's like, we've rigged the place to explode, and we're good. And you think, okay, this is gonna be great. We're gonna go in. We're going to like go in there, and we're gonna like fight off the communists because there's communists and Nazis in this game. It's really great. It's gonna be a great last stand. This is gonna be an amazing finish to the game because I remember the same level from the first game, and then the game just ends.
Oh boy, disappointing endings.
Yeah, a train just comes through the station. This fucking armored train just comes through. You say, oh shit, this armored train, this is badass. And then you wake up and there's a cutscene, that's the end of the game.
Are you on the train?
No. What happens is, like, you're there with your buddies, your Russian buddies, and you think, okay, we've rigged the station to explode because fuck if we're letting the communists have this place. because fuck them. There's something evil going on. They can't let the communists have it. And it's like, okay, so we're going to go down into the station and blow it up. And no, at that very moment, the train comes. There's this armored badass train that just comes through and like wrecks your party. And so the communists, like, yeah.
It just like plows through everything.
It just plows through everything, and the communists are on it. And you're like, "Oh shit, the communist armored badass train!"
We never thought that they would use the train tracks.
We just thought there'd be a fucking train in the metro. We didn't know. We didn't think like wreck the train track or some shit. Who the hell knew? So they bring this badass armored train, and it's like, "Oh shit, the Russians are here. Things are about to go bad." And then you wake up, and there's a cutscene, and that's it. That's the end of the fucking game.
So yeah. No one ever challenges the communists who show up in the train?
Okay, that would be actually a villain at the actual end of it. Okay, so the train goes through like your guys. Like you've had this last stand with the communists, you're trying to take over your base. The train comes through, which I guess has the entire communist army on it. And like all your guys are dead, and your guy wakes up and like you crawl over to this like one like electrical like panel or something. And you turn the handle, and it turns out that's the handle that blows up the station.
Wow, that's lame.
That's so fucking lame. And I just wonder, like, if this game, like, had, I don't know, like, 6 months, 8 months, and another few million dollars, maybe it would have been fucking amazing because they could have finished it. I just wonder if, like, maybe the THQ sell or bankruptcy kind of fucked these guys over on funding.
I don't think it was so much that as they've talked about their development conditions before and, like, they're from, I think it's the Ukraine, and that's not a great place to develop games. Like, they apparently work without electricity for quite a while.
I can believe that, but the first...
And people would, like, steal their shit.
Yeah, that's an issue. I guess there's people are stealing your shit that people are stealing. Like, well, somebody stole the end of that game.
There you go.
I guess.
Now, don't you wish you had only paid 1 cent for it?
Now I truly do feel that I should have only paid 1 cent and that I would not have ripped those guys off. Fuck you, you Ukrainian... I'm sorry, Ukrainians. I shouldn't say that.
You couldn't think of an actual thing for Ukrainians.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. Ukrainian uraniums? I don't know. That's going to work. Ukrainian...
That sounds like an awful sports team.
Or a band.
Ukrainian ukuleles? I don't know. I know we had like some Soviet bloc guy say he watches this podcast, so I apologize to the Ukrainian. If you are Ukrainian, if you're not, you understand how much of a dick Ukrainians are.
If you're not, you probably hate the Ukraine, because it's weird how those Soviet bloc countries all hate each other.
Are we lying? No.
No, I had a Serbian roommate when I was in college, and fucking hated all the other Soviet
blocs.
I'm trying to figure out how that would come up. Does he just like sleep talk shit about like Ukraine?
Yeah. It's about it's up in the news. That's probably why he brings up fucking Ukrainian dickheads. Let me tell you about these Ukrainian assholes.
And the funny thing is I could understand like half of his conversations because I don't know what language he was speaking, but like half of the slang in Clockwork Orange must have been based on it. I was like, I know that word. I know that word. So whoever stole the ending of Metro Last Light must have tacked it onto the end of Tomb Raider.
Oh.
Because that game has become the Return of the King. For the love of God.
It won't end? So what part are you? I forget exactly.
I'm like okay. On the fourth time that it says, "Oh look, you're finally gonna get off the island." Ah, no, psych.
Because I stopped playing back when like you find the helicopter and you got to heal yourself.
That was like,
yeah, that's
the
like,
very first thing.
No.
This is that's after. Oh fuck! What happens right?
You mean when you
that?
Climb the tower and then you summon the helicopter in?
No, that's an airplane. And then you try to chase down the pilot. Then you get kidnapped by the Oni. Then you escape the Oni. Then you land in a cave. Then you get back to the mountain village. Some other shit happens. And eventually... Oh, right. You try to get across a river.
Yeah,
by the current.
Yeah, that was the cutscene where, like, if you fuck up, she, like, gets her head impaled.
Yeah, I fucked up, got my head impaled, and then my 360 red-ringed.
Yeah, I had to sit through that fucking cutscene like 20 times because there was no because that was really it was a really bad area.
Yeah, like you get taken by the current of this river and you have to like move left and right to avoid the debris that you can't see because there's so much water on the screen.
Yeah, it's really difficult to tell which way you're supposed to go.
By like a micrometer. You smack into a piece of rebar that shoots up through Laura's jaw and out the top of her skull.
Yeah.
And this can happen in 6 places on that river.
And, you know, they don't mix that animation up either. It's always the same fucking...
Well, you know there was one guy there that was, like, really super proud of that animation.
You know, he should be. He really should be. But,
like, if that's the intention, it's probably really good work.
Yeah.
It's just really creepy intention.
Laura does get caught up in another stream later in the game, and that same thing happened. It's big.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on the Giant Bomb quick look, I think.
It's so fucking disturbing looking. But
it's so weird because it's, like, one of the only, like, really gruesome deaths in the game. The rest of them you don't see. Like, I mean, if you fall, like, a number of feet, she'll die the same way she does in every other Tomb Raider game. Like...
Well, one thing this game
there's
does
a lot of choking to death.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Lot of
stabbing in the head with climbing axes.
Yeah.
Well, for Laura particularly, I mean.
No. But, like, if you let someone melee you to death, you'll get, like, a gruesome death scene.
Oh, I've never let anyone get that close.
There is another scene later on where you get the ambiguous torso damage, like, stab that doesn't kill you. That video.
Oh, that was early on in the game.
Oh, yeah. It happens again.
That is Does several it? Times in the game.
Yeah. The one I did, she had to, like, find, like... She finally decided to heal the fucking thing in the worst way possible.
Yeah, this was after that river scene.
When you're going into the...
Airplane cockpit, and the glass shatters underneath her, and she manages to get a parachute... Which, if you hit a tree just wrong, will also impale her. And then eventually lands in the outside of the village, and then you have to get to the helicopter.
Did you guys see they basically announced a sequel to that game?
It's a good game. It's just, holy fuck, does it meander?
I like Tomb Raider a lot. It just had a bunch of problems that stem from a huge lack of focus.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's annoying that it's a collecting game. But then, like, your fast travel is taken away a lot.
Yeah. It's a collecting game, but it's a weird collecting game in that it's super easy to find out where all the things are on your map.
Yeah, and then when you finally do collect them, you get not much out of it.
Yeah.
You get some weapon upgrades, and that's about it.
So they said, they announced a new Tomb Raider comic, and they said, well, this is going to lead up to the sequel. And then there's this, like, moment of everyone going, wait a second, what?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, we fucked up.
What, sequel?
Well, let's be honest. Did anyone not think there was going to be a sequel to that?
Oh, the ending literally sets it up.
Oh, okay. I'll get there eventually. Well, right now, I'm at the part where they're about to take the boat upriver.
Well, there was also the part where, like, they sold 3 million copies, but somehow Square Enix decided that wasn't very good. So I thought that was why we'd never see a sequel.
Do you see the general manager at Eidos Montreal left because he and the upper management above him could not agree on certain things, which is almost certainly about Thief 4.
Oh, wow.
Because I've been hearing for months and months that development of that game is completely fucked. And now that the general manager quits because he says, in his words, that Eidos and Square Enix have a lack of competence and courage.
Oh, wow.
Seems like that game's not setting up well.
Yeah. That doesn't sound good at Eidos Montreal. That's the same. Yep.
What's theirs might not be ours.
Yep.
Thief 4 Monaco.
We should do it. Top-down Thief.
Yep.
The other gaming-related thing I did this week was I dismantled my computer and cleaned out all the heat sinks. So now Tomb Raider is not crashing on me.
Right.
I need to do that at some point. I need to dust my computer.
I do it, like, every time I remember, which is not as often as it should be. It's, like, every 2 months.
Hang on a second.
Oh, God, that's...
Yeah. How many heat sinks are in your computer? Because there's one in your CPU.
And GPU.
Oh, okay. You took off the GPU cooler. Okay. I don't know if
I didn't take it out. I just blew into it like a Nintendo cartridge.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But it's one of those things where the air flows through it the same direction all the time, and it's one of the ones that has a little turbine that shoots air out the back of the computer.
Right.
Which, once it fills up...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to keep that clean, otherwise you're boned.
Yeah, I've also figured out that one of the reasons it runs so hot and why it was so high performance when it came out is that it's factory overclocked.
Oh, wow.
That would make sense.
Yeah, so I might replace that with something that's not overclocked.
Yeah, because the lifespan of that thing is going to be shot now.
Well, this is your GPU or your CPU?
My GPU. And it's
I'll sell you my old one.
It's a 4-year-old 8800 GTX overclocked. And it still runs most things at 60 frames a second.
Yeah. Mine isn't a huge bottleneck, but I'm replacing everything else, so might as well change my GPU too.
It's a good time to upgrade now. We know exactly what we're going to be facing for the next 5 to 6 years.
I assume the GPU prices are going to fall this winter, because why wouldn't they?
They're pretty cheap now. Just the cursory shopping I did today, it's really cheap. Like, you could get something that... Like, my PC right now can run almost every PC game at 60 frames a second. 30 if it's really intensive. Yeah. You can get something just as powerful for 100.
Yeah, I've got a Radeon 6900, which I think is comparable to the 8800, I want to say. I might be wrong.
I have a 4890, which is a pretty big leap over previous things, but still, I can see it. Like, I know that games like Watch Dogs and Witcher 3 are going to probably stress that out a bit too much.
Yeah.
Just get something and run DX11, you'll probably be fine.
Yeah. I'm looking at Radeon HD 7850.
Yeah.
Because that's right at the $200.
I can't recommend Tech Report's build guide enough. TechReport.com. They run a really good site. That's pretty much the last three computers that I've built. I pretty much go from their guide.
There's also a company that you can look them up on Newegg, but they basically build graphics cards specifically for low power and low heat.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I'll probably go that route.
Not a bad deal.
All right. Let's wrap.
Yep. This episode's been canceled.
Canceled.
I'm sick of you and all of your talk.
Taking my ball and going home.
Bye.
Bye.
Toodles.